and that Steve Arpey be released from solitary confinement over this issue. Thank you for your time.
And that was Becky Johnson speaking before the Board of Supervisors. Becky is a video journalist and an activist in various other causes. She was notable in doing research around the John Dine slaying, where Officer Connor Carey and his with his partner Officer Martin Over in attendance shot dead Happy John Dine back in November of 1997. Interestingly enough, that cover-up happened within, I guess, 3 or 4 hours, and then was confirmed 12 hours later by Chief Belcher and District Attorney Art Danner in a famous news conference, which actually Becky got on videotape. She got in there even though all the other alternative news media were excluded. In this situation, looks like Mark Tracy and his cleanup squad have rushed in to rubber stamp the situation within 48 hours, so it seems like a similar thing is happening. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of who got hit where, and I believe, by the way, Becky is in error when she says that Argue was dragged down the hallway by his hair. I believe that the latest we've heard from Argue is that he was pulled by the hair, yanked up, but he was not dragged by the hair down the hall simply that way. But he was brutalized, he was slammed against the wall, and he was provided with medical attention, no doctor's attention at all, and a nurse came to see him 2 hours later. So that has happened. Also, this business about the jails and the sheriff checking out the situation for the temperatures in the jail, we heard that from Argue that apparently he was interrupted by sheriffs coming in with thermometers checking out the different temperature in the cells, but he said, strangely enough and coincidentally, that was the one night that they turned on the heat. So, goodness, it seems that's an interesting coincidence that happened that way. Let's hear a bit more of the testimony before the Board of Supervisors at oral communication. For those of you who are interested, the Board of Supervisors, unlike the City Council, which meets bi-monthly, or twice, I beg your pardon, twice a month, every 2 weeks, the Board of Supervisors, which meets in the County Building on the fifth floor at 701 Ocean Street, meets every week, usually. Holidays are accepted, and they have some other exceptions, but often it's every week. So on Tuesday morning, you can go and speak before the Board of Supervisors if you're interested. You can talk about the criminalization of poor people. You can talk about the disgraceful conditions in the jail. You can talk about whatever seems to you to be appropriate at a county level. Board of Supervisors has the legislative say over the county, like the City Council in Santa Cruz has the legislative say over the Santa Cruz City. And that's your options at 9 o'clock in the morning. Same day, actually, the City Council meets. The City Council meets, as you know, usually twice a month. They have special meetings, usually, or they have had a lot of special meetings in the last few months, but generally it's the second and fourth Tuesdays. Board of Supervisors is every Tuesday. Let's hear a bit more from the Board of Supervisors.
Good morning. My name is Dan Hopkins, and I'd like to speak about the Steve Arpey case. One of the things that I've noticed, because I've witnessed throughout all these arrests and being in jail and this court case and everything, that Steve, all these problems with Steve originally started from him selling the newspaper on the mall, which he was arrested, thrown out to the ground, because he told an officer that the officer himself was breaking the law by arresting him. He went to jail, and as far as I know, he put in solitary confinement and kept in jail, and then he had to turn around and write a letter of apology from the chief of police and some of the other organizations. About arresting him for not breaking law, there was no law against what he was doing. And then the police didn't like the idea that Steve was very strong-voiced and speaks his mind, probably in America, but anyway. And so the police, after a couple more incidents like that, like in the protest, they started following him. They gave him a jaywalking ticket on the mall where thousands of people crossed the street every single day without ever using a crosswalk hardly at all. And then he was put in solitary confinement a couple other times when he was arrested. He also, the reason he's in jail now, of course, is when he punched a police officer in the nose for hurting this woman who was holding a baby. And actually, I know that I think that she should have been given some sort of award for doing that. And it took a lot more guts than most people have to do something like that. Anyway, make a long story short is the police department and the sheriff's department, you know, appears to really have been out after Steve in many ways. Another thing that I just skipped was is that he was about to go to sleep while he was out, you know, out of jail, as he liked. He was about to go to sleep in a van. A friend of his allowed him to sleep in a van, and the police pulled up and said, "You're not about to let Steve sleep in that van, are you?" So it's a real obvious that they're tracking him and they're trying to get him. And basically, what I see is because he's loud and not submissive, that they're going to shut him up one way or another. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. I just want to say that I concur with everything that Mr. Hopkins has said. My name is Karen C. Turcott, a.k.a. the Bubble Lady. I'm speaking to get blowing bubbles. A very original Santa Cruz kind of situation. At any rate, we all know what happened to Steve, and as I was saying, I concur with everything that Mr. Hopkins had to say. I personally am outraged, and I would like to voice that outrage. A law enforcement officer is supposed to, one, uphold the law, not break it. Number two, a law enforcement officer is supposed to use force only when it's needed, and definitely not against a man who's been handcuffed and is not a threat. That is morally reprehensible, and I personally don't see how his mother could be proud of that kind of action. It needs to be really looked at, and this officer really needs to be disciplined. I preferably would opt for letting go a good fight because that is wrong, and this, you know, city government should not, or county government should not back up that kind of thing. It should send a very strong message that law enforcement officers are not there to intimidate and beat innocent people.
I am a very nonviolent person, but what he did was not violence. He was protecting the right of that mother. And for that, I have to say he should have received a commendation. They have the wrong man in jail. You cannot stand idly by. And I'm wondering what has happened to compassion here. What Steve did was something he had to do. There was no other way unless a child was to be wrenched from its mother by not one police officer, but ably assisted by a woman police officer. It's a very sad day when my friend gets beaten up by three men who entered his cell and continue to beat him up very brutally. Where is the brutality? Is it on the part of Steve, a brilliant young artist, a peaceful man whose only object is to make the world better? Is it a crime to want to make the world better? In this society, I'm asking the Board of Supervisors to look at what has happened, and I feel that Steve has suffered enough. He should be free because he never should have been incarcerated in the beginning. So I'm leaving you with the responsibility and the opportunity to really go through this case and to do what was right. What is right is to make Steve a free man and to protect all the prisoners. It should not be a crime. Thank you very much for hearing me.
Good morning. I'm a visitor here to the city. My name is Pam. I have a I'm a victim of police abuse in Philadelphia. 11 men, women, and children in my family were bound to death.
Excuse me. I won't take this from your time, but if you just do that back for some little further away,
okay.
It will be able to hear you.
Okay. All right. When I came here, I heard about the case of Steve and went about investigating. I saw the film. I was shocked. When a woman asked a police officer when she saw another woman being arrested, I don't even know what does she do, so I can't do it, so I won't be arrested. And when the response to that is, and it's on tape, I would really like for each and every last person here to see the tape. The response to that was to twist this woman's arm up. She had a baby in her arms, and you know, the other person go to snatch the baby away from him. Steve didn't just walk up and punch this man in order to make him stop hurting this woman who only asked the question, how I not get arrested. We have a terrible situation here. In Philadelphia, the police department have been investigating on several occasions. I think it is our duty, and you know, because I don't see a separation between Philadelphia and Santa Cruz, and when people are being harassed. All we need to do is look at the tape and find out exactly what's happening here, and let due process happen. I'm quite sure once you see this tape, you'll understand that this man is not a criminal. The criminal is still walking, and because he did what any righteous man would do, was stand up and protect a woman and her child without fear, because he could have been killed that day. But it didn't matter. What mattered to him was a young woman, and we have pictures of it, with a baby in her arms was being abused by a police officer. And I think we need to really investigate the case and then come out with, you know, some findings. One of the things I've asked people to do is make sure that that tape go on public access TV, put it in the community so that y'all can have support to help you do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Robert Norris. It's particularly frightening to hear about an assault of a prisoner, much less a prisoner in solitary and in handcuffs when he's held behind locked bars.
And that Robert Norris, he always gets too much airtime anyway, and besides, we heard the whole speech last time. For those of you who are interested in hearing that speech for the Board of Supervisors, you can get a copy of it if you call 423-HUFF, as well as other documentation of the a violent assault, and it was a violent assault, beating is the appropriate word, of Steve Argue by Deputy Zamora on Saturday, I guess it was February 1st. Today is the, no, it was actually January 29th, a little bit. But it was on a week ago Saturday. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We got a call while that tape was on from Mary. That's the woman, 74-year-old woman about to be evicted. She is... wants to get in touch with us, wants to talk on the air about what's been going on. And I must say that we haven't been able to do a lot of effective organizing around that issue, but it sounds like the organizing may be beginning around the sleeping ban in terms of a 24-hour protest at City Hall. Of course, David Silva and others have been doing some wonderful organizing around the FAST and the backup sleeping ban initiative. But in terms of a out-there protest, that hasn't happened for quite a while. And perhaps the best time to begin with that protest would be to make Mary a part of it if she wants to be. And again, we're talking a person who's 74 years old, not in the best of health. I would like, of course, the most effective poster children for these kinds of protests, but not at the expense of the health and well-being. And indeed, Scott Graham, activist in numerous matters in the city, proposed at the end of the last show that since the city council seems bound and determined, and it's coming up on the next city council agenda, by the way, to evict all the people from the Dolphin Lee complex, or, quote, relocate them. Let's see if they can relocate one woman now. Can they find affordable housing for one woman, one 74-year-old woman, in a short period of time? I think that's an excellent question. I'm going to call Mary, and we're going to have her on the air after this next song from Phil Oakes. You've offered to pay rent, and they're still refusing to take it?
Oh, right.
And how much is your rent where you are now?
Oh, do I have to tell you?
No, you don't. Of course not. But I know that you're concerned because you think that the landlord wants to have you evicted to put in, kind of to double his profits by putting in a couple that's going to be paying twice what you're paying. Is that your prediction? Or?
No, more. He's going to get more. And his son wants it for partying.
Oh. Well, and you've been having trouble finding a place. You've been looking for, what, since August when you signed an agreement to move out on January 31st?
I was sick most of the winter.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't look around. And my health comes first, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, this agreement that you signed through Senior Legal Services, you said you felt it was done with a gun to your head with the threat of eviction.
Right, right. Because they didn't let me read it, and the woman, what's her name, at the legal aid, the head one there, Ellen Perry?
Uh-huh.
She wasn't even there when I went to look at the stipulation.
Mm-hmm.
So They made me sign it. Nobody explained it to me or anything. They just made me think if I didn't sign it, I was going to get evicted anyway.
And we've heard from a number of different people, and as I mentioned on the last show, I talked to a former attorney, I talked to a current attorney, and it looks like once the sheriff comes in, once they get an order from the court, which should be shortly because you just got a letter from the attorney for the tenants, Charlene Attic,
that they're going to go back to court, and I guess they're going to let you go back too, but you don't have much chance of defending yourself because you have already signed this previous document, and you're not getting any assistance from senior legal services, right?
Right.
It looks tough for you. You're, you know, facing rain on the streets. Well, you know, we're starting a protest at City Hall. You're always welcome to join us there. Maybe we set up a tent for you or mm-hmm. something. That's not, of course, something I think you want to move from a warm, comfortable house into. Have you any plans for any hope at all? Is anybody offering you a place to stay in
no.
the meantime?
No.
What kind of medical conditions do you have that make this difficult for you, if you want to talk about them?
Well, like I told you, I have these third-degree burns, you know.
Which requires a bathtub, right?
Right, and yeah, I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I'm on the anemic side.
Mm-hmm.
And, my leg acts up frequently, you know. I have trouble with my left leg, you know, where they took the skin grafts.
Mm-hmm.
And it really bugs me when it's damp.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't sleep outside because I tried it.
We'll have to move you into Mayor Sugar's office.
That's an idea. That'd be a good idea.
I think so. I think that would be our next plan. We'll give Keith a call and have him set up a cot in his office.
Yeah, he has plenty of room.
That might work. And I'm not entirely joking. I know that the last time that I came into the mayor's office in a political protest was back in 1989. A man named John... I'll remember his last name soon, but he was beaten by the police in handcuffs about the face, shoulders, stomach, and knees. He was bleeding. He came to me, and the mayor didn't want to see him, so I just simply dragged him into the mayor's office and had him bleed all over her rug. You know what? And in order to get this was Mayor Marty Wormhout when she was mayor.
Oh no!
John Calder, John Caldwell, Clower, John Clower. His name was Clower. And the police then, of course, had him jailed thereafter and moved around from jail to jail out of the area. But he was quite a sight. There was quite a story. The person who he actually intervened to save a woman whose throat was being cut, and the police mistakenly thought he was the assailant, put him in handcuffs, and then began beating him. And she screamed, "No, no, he's the one who saved me. He's the one who saved me." And it was quite a story. Of course, it didn't get into the Sentinel, as you might imagine.
No kidding.
No kidding. And that was the last time I was in the mayor's office with somebody bleeding on the rug or, you know, doing that kind of protest. But I think, you know, it might be an opportunity to give Keith an opportunity to show how he can find affordable housing, since he's prepared to evict 200 people and is going to guarantee that he can find them all affordable housing in the Dolphin Lee. Maybe, you know, once he gets rid of the Dolphin and Lee apartment complexes in the Beach Flats and sends all these Hispanics onto the road with severance checks, whether, you know, he can actually find affordable housing for anybody. I think you'd be a good test. But I say that out of you know, an activist's passion, and I don't know. I mean, if, you know, I don't think it's something you want to do for your health or anything else necessarily. I know that Donna Dice of the Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz has been outraged to hear of your situation. She, in fact, called me and was the one who wanted to organize a protest, and our communications have not been too good the last few days. So have you heard anything more from her?
No.
Okay, well, maybe we can get her on the line and talk to her as well. In the meantime, I would encourage folks who want to support you to give a call to 423-HUFF. Or perhaps to call into our station here, Free Radio, 427-3772. Mary, what kind of a place are you looking for? What are you willing to settle for at this point?
One-bedroom apartment.
What kind of rent can you pay?
About $750.
Okay. And you want... I guess right now the apartment you're in is right along on Walnut Street, right near the Rise Zone, right?
Right.
What's the address?
321A Walnut Avenue.
So please, when you get any documents, call in immediately to us, and more documents. And if you get a time when they're going to evict you, some of us can come down and at least, I don't know, I hate to say it, photograph this spectacle of a 74-year-old woman being turned out on the streets. Alternatively, if we get information about a place where we can, you know, we can offer you, we can call you.
Yeah.
Is there more you want to say about this now?
Well, I got the letter right here of 48-hour notice of non-compliance.
Mm-hmm. When's it dated?
It's dated February 2,
right.
2000.
Yeah, I remember you read that letter to me a couple nights ago, and I guess it has a number of provisions. Have you received any other communication?
No, just this letter.
Yeah, I think it said that Charlene Attic, the attorney for the tenants, was going to court and that they were going to essentially, you know, you could go to court too, but that the problem is going to be that, you know, under this, apparently what you feel was duress and with an attorney not present. And was an attorney present or was only a paralegal present when you signed this?
Paralegal.
Right. Back in August, you signed a situation that signed away your rights. Is there more you want to say about this?
Well, it's like I said, they didn't give me a chance to read it. And the head one that made out the stipulation wasn't there when I went to read it, you know. She had left.
The attorney, you mean?
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm going to encourage folks to call in. Would you like to, if you can get to a radio with FM, I know you're having trouble finding a radio. I guess you have an AM radio, but not an FM radio, perhaps. You could tune in and listen and hear what folks are saying. I'm going to have to free up the phone line so people can call in, but so they can talk about this and other cases. Is there more you want to say before we do that?
I guess that's it. Thank you.
Hey, Mary, get back to me off air, and we'll continue trying to find some... obviously there are solutions. I don't know if we can provide them, but we can certainly bring the message to the public one way or another.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Mary.
Bye.
Way high, so high, traveling fast and free. Spaceman, look down, tell me what you see. Can you see the hunger there? Strikes without a sound. Can you see the food you burn as you circle round? Way high, so high, spaceship, all the world will cheer. Spaceman, look down, tell me what you hear. Can you hear a child cry? Body filled with pain, deadly sores when cures are there, how much fuel remains? Way high, so high, spaceship made of steel. Spaceman, look down, tell me what you feel. Can you feel the money gone as you sail through space? Can you feel how many die when you win the race? Way high, so high, traveling fast and free. Spaceman, look down, tell me what you see.
Phil Oakes, Spaceman. Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 has open lines. If you want to get in touch, it's 427-3772. There are several meetings coming up that might interest folks. We got a call, by the way, while we were occupied with Larry Hildes, who's a volunteer attorney from Berkeley, who's come down to see Steve in the lockup, and he's seeing him hopefully even as we speak now. He has come all the way from Berkeley at his own expense. He's not getting paid for this kind of work, and so I want to tip my hat to him. Larry and I have had our difficulties in the past in terms of problems on earlier cases, but I appreciate it when a man with an attorney's credential is willing to interrupt whatever he's doing, and he's doing a number of things. He's got a pepper spray case going up in Berkeley, and he's been involved in the Redwood defense of the Redwoods and other things of that sort, various civil rights cases, to come down and deal with a person who local attorneys pretty much don't want to get involved with. I couldn't get a doctor to go into the jail. It took me 3 days to get an attorney to find enough time to go in there, and would have been really important to have Steve's wounds looked at on the day that he got them a week ago Saturday. But, you know, we didn't get anybody in there until, I think it was till Tuesday. So it's good when we get people to volunteer, and I want to thank him for coming down. Talking a little bit about the upcoming city council meeting, because that is kind of rolling at us in 2 days. That's going to be at City Hall right across from the main library. There's, first of all, a closed litigation session. That's when you don't get to go into it except at the very beginning, when you can speak about items that are on the agenda of that closed litigation session. And that includes a number of police misconduct items. One of them, I believe, concerning, I believe it's either Lefevre or Eveleth in the Dickmeyer versus City of Santa Cruz case, an alleged false arrest. And there's another one in the Detano versus City of Santa Cruz case, another alleged false arrest after an altercation between neighbors. And there's some claims, various claims, including the Seaside Company is claiming money. A number of people are Stephen F. Hoge, Satyander S. Kinyar, Clarissa Seraphim, Selena Watson. And all these claims, the place to present your concern about these claims is really at the oral communications, I should say the public comment period, before the closed session on 1:30. That doesn't actually happen in city council chambers. That happens in the city manager's conference room, which is close to the city council chambers. If you ask folks, they'll direct you to it. It's near the mayor's office. I'm not saying anybody wants to talk about those particular issues, but if you do, and just to kind of get you familiar for when your claim comes up, that's where you're going to want to talk about it. And then you're going to want to talk about it later in the afternoon session of City Council, where it will come up after the city attorney has made his recommendations. And then you can talk about it publicly before the City Council and the television cameras in the City Council chambers. And that happens in the afternoon session from 3 to 5. So what's coming up from 3 to 5 today? Well, I mean, on Tuesday. There's going to be these liability claims. There's a review of police review. That's a motion to establish a committee of six by Mayor Sugar, made up of three members of City Council and three members of the Citizens Police Review Board, to reexamine and recommend changes to the structure of the Santa Cruz Police Review System. And I guess this is CPRB, Citizens Police Review Board Chair Arnie Leff's way of getting the City Council involved in legal changes that will produce a police review board that actually has some teeth. That's the optimistic theory. I become very cynical, perhaps just realistic, about the Citizens Police Review Board. I didn't go to their last meeting. I don't really intend to go to their next one. They moved oral communications to the middle, making it hard for people to be involved, and then they moved it back later, sort of when they found no one was coming, perhaps, or maybe they decided that was appropriate. They don't have any kind of public input sessions between times. In other words, none of the CPRB members have a day where they meet with the public and take input from them. They used to have Sandy Brown and Becky Blythe used to, but they no longer do that. Maybe they're getting too much input from me. Who knows? But it's really a pretty closed system, and it's also a pretty phony system. I mean, again, like with various other groups, they tried to get an independent investigation of the Steve Argue events that you heard about earlier, mentioned at the Board of Supervisors, not the recent beating of Steve in jail, but the police behavior on May 22nd when they arrested people at this peaceful protest and provoked this scene where people were so angry they surrounded the police van, and then cops, of course, began arresting people for surrounding the van, even though there was no violence involved in that behavior. It was a peaceful a protest against them carrying off a person, Go Ling Liao, a UCSC student, that they never charged. They never took to trial. Charges were all dropped against her for this so-called boombox crime, holding a boombox in the door of the the Democratic Party dinner with the sounds of Yugoslavian bombing to give those Democrats a little taste of reality as to what's going on while they were lifting their glasses to Representative Sam Farr, who was funding that Yugoslavian slaughter, which goes on, by the way, every day. NATO is continuing to oversee this destruction of Yugoslavia. But that's another story. Anyway, the Police Review Board is the question that's going to be on the Tuesday Council agenda. Should it be strengthened? Sure, people can go and talk about that. I think what you really need to talk about, as I said before, are real changes in the police department. And then what's happening in the next few weeks are budget hearings. And that's what you really need to go to demand that budgeting be moved from Chief Belcher's overloaded plate to that of people like services that could serve Mary and provide real affordable housing, real legal assistance. That the city council should be looking at renter protections and not at playing around with a police review board that isn't going anywhere. I don't know. I mean, I have to see what the changes are before I can, you know, simply dismiss the whole thing out of hand. But given the way the lack of public leadership Sugar has shown on issues like the Dolphin Lee and the sleeping ban, it's hard to believe he's suddenly going to jump in with some kind of meaningful, strong board with real disciplinary powers, real investigatory powers that actually comes from advocates in the community instead of former police officers and so forth, like we have currently on the board, or people who just have no time to do it. I thought Sandy Brown should have resigned months ago. I mean, she's got no time to do this stuff. And I don't mind saying it. She's a good person and well-intentioned, but she's got no time to do this. Some have suggested that this whole board proposal is an attempt to get Sandy Brown to stay on board. There's going to be an appointment of a new police review board person at the evening session. That's another thing that's coming up on Tuesday at the City Council. A bunch of commission appointments, and one of them is Catherine Byers, appointee for the police. If you believe Catherine Byers is going to appoint somebody that is going to be better than Lisa Rose, I guess it's hard to find somebody worse than Lisa Rose in many respects. She was the chair who helped to... she was on the board when they whitewashed Happy John Dine's case, and she has repeatedly... She's got quite a record that I've gone through in detail in past programs. And she's the Byers appointee, and Byers refused to fire her. She recently resigned. Last time I saw her, she was walking around in an orange outfit as sort of a para-auxiliary police outfit on New Year's Eve. That was in front of the Veterans Hall. It was kind of funny. She'd found her true calling, helping the police. And that's fine. I mean, that's what some folks want to do, and they should go do it. But they shouldn't pretend to be people concerned with really reviewing the police. Nor should we believe that a group that's set up to review the police but doesn't review the police and doesn't use the powers it has, like public hearings and independent investigations, is going to change because Keith Sugar sets up a committee. I'm going to probably be on hand for this, and I'm going to talk about it, but I am very cautious about this. Other stuff that's happening on the City Council agenda, if I can get my pages in the right order, is at 5 o'clock, the Redevelopment Agency, that's City Council sitting as a different group, is going to be taking oral communication on public, the need for housing, and I think Mary might want to go to that one at 5 o'clock. And there's also a proposal to establish a relocation advisory committee for the Beach Flats housing development. That's for the Dolphin Lee. They just hate to say those words, Dolphin Lee. They just want to say Beach Flats housing development because they've been pretending for so long there's no such project on the boards that it sort of annoys them to have to really go public with it. Of course, that also means they go public with their plan to evict hundreds of people under the euphemism of relocate. This is a proposal to establish a relocation advisory committee for the Beach Flats housing development and then identify the composition, charge, and sunset date for that committee. I talked to Scott Graham, who had hoped to be able to be in here or to call in but hasn't been able to come in. He's got a one-page staff report. They said that they discussed it not with the city attorney, but with, he suspects, with a man named T. Brett Hawkins, who's the hired gun attorney of the Redevelopment Agency, who wrote letters 2 years ago when the Rotkin-Matthews majority was trying to push through the Beach South of Laurel plan. At that time, they used T. Brett Hawkins to claim that they didn't have to have a project area committee. Now, they're not looking for a project area committee. Now they're looking for a relocation advisory committee. Why? What's the difference? You know, why go into all these details? Well, there is in redevelopment law, as we've talked about in other shows, a legal requirement for a project area committee when you have significant numbers of people who are going to be displaced. And those people, some of the residents, have to be placed on that committee to examine the project. That's not what the city council wants. We have an incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Eleanor.
Hi, Eleanor. Are you talking about Dolphin Lee or something else?
A kind of a blanket statement that covers all of it.
Okay.
I wanted at one point to say, too, that Mary, the 74-year-old woman who's being illegally evicted,
mm-hmm.
has to appear in court. She has to go there. She's got to appear because she was wrangled into it. The document is really a fraud because she didn't know what she was signing.
Mm-hmm.
And she needs assistance there, obviously, in that area. And I hope I heard you correctly, that in the end, that there may be an attorney who's stepping forward for her?
No, unfortunately, that was for Steve Argue, not for her.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, I caught the one about Steve Argue, and that's wonderful, too. What I want to mention...
No, that's an idea. Larry Hildes is in town today. I'll alert him to Mary's case.
Please do, because, you know, we have a problem here in Santa Cruz. We have two problems with the legal population, the attorneys. We don't have good attorneys in Santa Cruz, with the exception of a handful of really fine ones that we do have that are very busy cleaning up after a lot of other people. But we have a lot of inept or uncaring
mm-hmm.
Attorneys that are not doing their job. They're not doing life by the people that they're representing, as we saw with Steve Argue, with his first attorney. And here we have, he must have another attorney. I haven't heard any mention why that attorney hasn't come out for what's going on to him. Kate Wells stepped in, who's not his attorney in this matter, but who is one of the ones who is always stepping in on behalf of cleaning up the loose ends and the dirty work of the other attorneys in town. So we have a problem here in Santa Cruz with the caliber of a majority of the attorneys, and I think they're causing a lot of problems. And I think the second problem I believe we have is that the people who are being misrepresented, whatever way it is that the individual has been or is being misrepresented, those attorneys have to be reported to the Bar Association. Complaints have to be made against these attorneys because they go on doing their bad deeds to the next unsuspecting people that come along. And it really isn't fair that other people don't know that they're bad when they really are. And they have to be called to task over this. The Bar Association takes a dim view on the activities of a lot of these attorneys in our town. And if you ever get a copy of the Californian Attorney, you'll see in the back pages the actions that are taken against these attorneys. For the deeds they do. It may seem to the person insignificant because they have been made to feel insignificant by their attorney, but actually, in fact, it's very significant, and it's the attorney who's the one who's wrong here.
In fact, you yourself are going to kick your own attorney's ass.
Oh, yes. Number three is history. I don't want to mention any names.
Why not?
Why not? Because I will be going after these people, and I don't want in any way to damage my actions against them, and I'm sorry about that. I will be taking the complaints we made, and they can look them up and see them. I have three, and I'm not going to mention any names. You know. Back up a little bit. I am homeless.
Mm-hmm.
I live in a car. I'm severely disabled. A lot of your listeners know this already. I don't want to go on about that.
No,
much.
Please.
But I have to tell you, I'm in this car because of inept representation. I'm going through the workers' compensation legal system. It's a flawed system in that it puts too much trust in the faith of the applicant attorneys. Applicant is the injured worker, which might be called a plaintiff in another court. They're the ones taking the action. And so it's kind of backwards. The insurance companies that represent the employers are the defendants. The attorney for the defendant would be one for the insurance company that I'd be going up against. So the applicant attorneys. My applicant attorney, number three, who is now history, and I'm so proud, I'm starting the new year, representing myself at this point. because in the 4.5 years of this case, during the period of time that I wasn't represented, I got the most action done. That was the only time I got action. So I'm now going ahead on my own, but going back a bit, the one attorney that I recently had my case for almost a year and took the case saying that he would get me before a judge and never did, he is on the Homeless Resource Center board. He voted against the rights of the homeless people.
That's correct. And I'm afraid in that context I'm happy to give his name because he is a public figure.
Knows the agony, knows the abuse that's going on toward me and my caregiver, knows that it's because the judge in this case, or no judge, knows that this is going on. He voted against the rights of homeless people while keeping me homeless. Thank you very much. He will be hearing from me. Not in that area. I'm going to go after him in legal areas because that legally he didn't perform and broke agreements and so on and so on. And, by the way, that's number three. All three lawyers knew that I was in that situation. And they're fine and happy because they're housed and they're getting theirs. And I think we have to take heed against all of these attorneys that they've got to be reported. They must be reported. It's our moral obligation toward our brethren.
I would go further. I would say they need to be exposed publicly. Reporting them to the Bar Association is like, you know, reporting the judges to their mothers or something. The Bar Association is just a, you know, it's a bunch of attorneys looking after attorneys, and they're not likely to get much. Although I agree with you, I think it's good to make a record, like with the Citizens Police
they
Review
have to
Board.
Be complained against and
but,
followed up.
But you really need to do is you need to expose these people publicly with flyers and
as well.
And
I
you speak about
so.
Them publicly and so forth.
Yeah, as you do when you speak or make a complaint, you read it on the air for all of us to hear.
Yep.
That's the kind of thing that should be done. We could get some system where it gets sent into Huff or you personally, and you cover it. Make it a part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
It may jam up the works here, and nothing else might be read and heard. But hopefully people will do that, because in all of these cases, including that one way back, the guy with the property who was given the wrong information, well, I don't want to go into it, but anyway, this is what something I feel should be done. And I also want to say quickly congratulations to Dan Hopkins for being back there for a long time. I have missed him being at City Hall.
Uh-huh.
Kind of sad because it brings back memories of Sean Alemi.
Mm-hmm.
But Dan was the driving force and was the one to the end, and I'm grateful that he's back at it and the support he's getting. I can't do any fasting along with David Silver and the other people. Or going without sleep, but I will hold a prayer day, which I haven't determined which one I'll do yet, which I will offer up prayer the entire day.
Mm-hmm.
I do currently pray each night. I set aside the time for the people who are out there, but Robert is going, he's waving me on to forget all that prayer. Anyway, I just want to say I'm going to do my part in that way. And thank you all, and to Roxanne and to everybody. And also, what's going to happen to Keith Sugar for the way he addressed Roxanne? Deplorable.
Yeah, we're gonna really be talking about Dolphin Lee in greater detail, hopefully on Thursday or possibly next Sunday. But right now, we are up against it. We have about 3 minutes left,
oh my. Okay.
And we got to go.
Thanks for the time, Robert. Thank you for everything you do for all of us.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're going to wind down now and get ready for a change of pace on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Just to finish up what's happening at City Council on Tuesday evening. Again, it's commission appointments for the Citizens Police Review Board and other advisory bodies. And there's also oral communications. You can talk out for 3 minutes at City Council in the evening. Tomorrow at 5:30 at the ABC room of the Municipal Auditorium, the Homeless Issues Task Force is meeting again, and there actually may be some items on the agenda for folks, because I have an inkling that some of the folks who've lost their confidence and lost their momentum may have gotten it back. It's hard to say for sure. We had hoped back in December the Homeless Issues Task Force would confront the City Council directly on safe sleeping zones. They did not. They kind of weenied around, but hopefully that will change, and so you might want to check that out at 5:30 tomorrow at the Municipal Auditorium, which is right across from City Hall and kitty corner from the library. So that's coming up. And there's a lot more coming up, but what's coming up immediately is the Little Red Hen. And she's here. She's ready. Actually, we got the usual folks who are ready to give you anything particular coming up on the show.
Matilda.
Matilda is coming up on the show. And I don't know what that means, but I bet you regular listeners might. In any case, we're going to go out on Phil Oakes, play another number of his, and the next voices you hear after that are going to be, well, you'll hear them. They're coming at you, and we're going to have a return to Bathurst Fair's Broadside 6 to 8 on Thursday. I'm going to leave the mic to Jenna and Baba, and I want to thank you for being with us.
All around this country, trouble in the air. There's a million voices calling me, asking, do you know and do you care? Do you know and do you care? So I'm gonna do what I have to do, say what I have to say. And I'm gonna be what I have to be. Now won't you come on along with me? Won't you come along with me? Don't wanna cause no sorrow, don't wanna cause no pain. Oh, I'm only gonna cause what I have to cause, until I've broken every chain, till I've broken every chain. So I'm gonna do what I have to do, say what I have to say. And I'm gonna be what I have to be. Now won't you come on along with me? Won't you come along with me? Oh, there's only one thing I know. No, we're not alone. Was a million here before we came. Be a million when we're gone, we're gone. Million when we're gone. So I'm gonna do what I have to do, say what I have to say. And I'm gonna be what I have to be. Now won't you come on along with me? Won't you come along with me?
Well, when Woody Guthrie was sick and dying, Bob Dylan visited him as he was lying in a hospital bed. Bob sang him songs. Woody smiled and said, I'm glad you come. You belong here. Go forth and be the voice of your generation. Well, above Beverly Hills one night, real late, I snuck past a security gate and parked by a Mercedes Benz, climbed up a barbed wire fence and over. Couple of scratches, but I'd made it to the home of Bruce Springsteen. Well, I found the boss asleep in bed, pillows piled up around his head. I turned on the light, took off my coat, stuck a thermometer down his throat, said, don't talk. You look pale, boss. Not at all well. I said, you look bad, and I asked him, could he think of us as Bob and Woody? I said, you just rest your pretty head as I sing to you in your hospital bed. He said, What the hell are you talking about? I ain't sick. See in a hospital. And how did you get past the security gate? Said I wrote you a song called Song to Bruce with a tune I stole from one of yours. To his platinum records next appointed said I just want to be anointed. Springsteen, I wrote you a song about a funny old world that's coming along. Seems sick and it's tired, it's hard and it's torn. He looks like he's died and it's hardly been born. He started really looking sick and I stopped singing. Well, then Patty, his wife, came in and said, geez, I'm sorry about your husband's incurable disease. I'm here to help any way I can, you know, Woody and Bob, Bruce and Dan. She said, honey, what am I hearing? He said, baby, you know I'm in the prime of life. I said, down to 2 million in sales last time I read the signs, Patty. He says, some people think this record's my best. I said, shh, you need your rest. He said, there's a madman on the loose. I said, Woody and Bob, Dan and Bruce. Well, he screamed out of his bed and said, all right, I've heard enough of this stuff. He grabbed my throat and dragged me hard down the hall and through the yard. Surprising strength for a dying man. Well, he threw me out the way I come. Barbed wire scraped my face and thumb. I've been thinking ever since. Bob and Woody, Dan and the artist formerly known as Prince. Bob and Woody, Dan and Bob. So long, Bel Air. Howdy, Malibu.